behind the scenes here in Studio A. Hi, it's Jennifer Rooks. Most days, Robin Rylette and I broadcast from the same studio here at Maine Public. Studio A is home to Morning Classical and to Maine Calling. When we were planning programs for the Grow Together Pledge Drive, Robin and I thought it might be fun for listeners if we took you behind the scenes here and talked about how the shows we host are put together. How does Robin choose which classical selections to play each day? What does the Maine Calling team think about when we map out each week or month? What are your questions for us? We're broadcasting on both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical today, and welcome listeners from both services. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the studios of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are so excited today to be simultaneously talking with all of you, the listeners of both our news and classical music channels. We have a rare chance to share some behind-the-scenes stories and maybe even some secrets with you. I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague and friend, Robin Rylette. She is the host of Morning Classical Music, and she's Maine Public's music director. Robin, thanks for joining me.
It's such a pleasure, Jennifer. It's just such a pleasure.
As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever wondered what goes through Robin's mind as she selects the music she plays?
I wonder what goes through Robin's mind when I select the music.
Do you have favorite musical genres or pieces that you've heard on our program? Or is there anything you've always wondered about what happens behind the scenes at Maine Calling? I'll take a couple questions, too. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. But before I talk with Robin, we have on the line with us Maine Public political correspondent Mal Leary. He's going to fill us in on what's going on with the second congressional district vote recount. Thanks for calling in the midst of this breaking story, Mal. We just heard on the news that Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, after a recount, has declared Jared Golden the victor. But I have a feeling this is not the end of it.
It is not the end of it, Jennifer. But what we have is the first results for a congressional election in the country using the ranked choice voting system. What happened was, as you recall, when we first had the votes counted, the unofficial votes counted from election night, Bruce Poliquin had a plurality of 1,500 votes. But when ranked choice voting was run and the votes for William Hoare and Tiffany Bond, those folks who voted for them who cast a second and third place vote, we end up with Jared Golden winning by the tightest of margins, 50.53% to 49.47% for Bruce Poliquin. That is a pretty tight race to translate it into actual number of votes. 139,231 for Jared Golden, 136,328 for Bruce Poliquin. What's interesting here is that it's clear that of the more than 20,000 people who voted for the two independents, William Hoare and Tiffany Bond, not all that many of them chose to use ranked choice voting and cast a second and third place ballot, or those numbers would have been a little higher in terms of actual votes.
Now, Mal, there was a chance that, or Bruce Poliquin was hoping that this recount wouldn't even happen today, and it was only after a court decision this morning that it went forward, correct?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the Secretary of State was ready to go forward unless the judge told him not to go forward. The judge instead denied the restraining order that was being asked for by the Poliquin and his fellow plaintiffs in their lawsuit, saying he just did not see any irreparable harm that would be caused by letting the process go forward. Now, one of the attorneys for Bruce Poliquin, Josh Tardy, told me just outside the Secretary of State's counting room where this recount was going on by ranked choice voting, said, clearly, we're going to proceed. We want to argue this case. we still think that ranked choice voting is unconstitutional, and we're going to continue to argue that case regardless of this decision by the Secretary of State's office using ranked choice voting. So what we're looking forward to is several weeks now of more legal juggling, while at the same time we will have Jared Golden being certified as the new member of Congress from this district until such time as a court finally gets to the point of saying yay or nay on the constitutionality of ranked choice voting.
Sure, that was my question. The timeline here, you know, what are the chances that this will work its way through the court system before the new Congress is seated?
Well, I think we'll get a decision from the federal district court from Judge Walker. I mean, he's well up to speed on this. His opinion on the temporary restraining order was well-reasoned. The question becomes, will it go another step and a step beyond that?
Sure, will because, it be appealed, right?
Say, exactly. If Judge Walker says, no, this is constitutional, and Congressman Poliquin appeals to the First Circuit, that takes a chunk of time, and certainly you're going to end up with the new Congress deciding whether to seat Jared Golden as a member or as a provisional member pending the ruling of a court.
Wow. Well, Mallory, I know that you're really busy today. I appreciate you taking time to join us today on Maine Calling, and we certainly will be following your reporting, Steve Missler's reporting, as the day unfolds. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Well, back to Robin. Welcome to Maine Public Classical listeners who don't usually hear Maine Calling at this time of day. You know, Robin, we both use this studio, but in very different ways. From 9 to noon, you were using this big, beautiful CD player here, and you're usually by yourself. An hour later, when I'm here, I'm not using the CD player, but rather I am not alone, and I'm talking to guests sitting where you are right now. And so it's just kind of interesting to, I think, the listeners to know that this one space is used in such completely different ways, you know, right one after another, pretty much. And Ed Morin also does Here and Now from the same studio.
He does. I mean, it is a very well used space. And I think I love what you're saying, Jennifer, because I think knowing that these studios are used so much to bring you, our listeners, I think, wonderful content from the variety that we hear on Maine Calling. And I'm also going to have a chance to ask Jennifer some questions, too, to the kind of focused concentration of let's put on a music show. You know, it's such variety. And you're right. It's great to have the studio and to have this facility. And
so I'm going to give you a chance to ask me questions, but not for a while, because
okay.
I've got a few for you.
Okay.
First, how long have you been a classical music host?
Officially since 1990, so for 28 years.
Wow.
I'm in my 28th year.
How has the role of a public radio classical music host changed over those 28 years?
You know, I think in essence, I really believe in essence it's the same. It's putting together your knowledge of music with the knowledge that you have about who your listeners might be and what they might be doing, and trying to create a show, whether it's for an hour or in my case 3 hours, that if you have someone, there's always someone in my mind that is going to listen to my show from 9 to noon. And then there are other people in my mind who are tuning in and out of that 3 hours. So I'm always thinking about how to program music that might have some kind of a thread running through it for the long-term listener, and something that will be of interest and enjoyment to people who are coming in and out. And I don't think that basic principle has changed at all. I think what's changed is the way we do things. So for instance, you know, starting off, I was using LPs, and then it was LPs and CDs. And now many stations aren't using CDs at all anymore. It's all MP3 or MP2 files. And Maine Public Classical is slowly starting that transition here.
You like CDs better, though, don't you?
I like the sound quality. The compressed files, that, you know, the WAV file that's on a CD is really, for classical music, you have these huge highs and lows in your dynamic range and in just the scale of what you're using. literally the scale. And when you compress that file, as you do in MP2s and MP3s, it takes away some of the body of richness of the classical music. However, at Maine Public Classical, as we begin this process of transitioning, we are going to have our digital files as WAV files. Mm. So I'm excited about that. And it opens up some new opportunities for us, too.
So I want to ask kind of a big question. Just what is classical music anyway? I know that different people have different opinions about what qualifies as classical music. I know this because you've worked in the space next to me for a lot of years. Before that, Suzanne Nance. And I've heard some of these discussions where different people have very clear and very strong opinions about what classical music is.
Well, so I'm going to tell you a fun story. This was probably about 10, 11 years ago when I was back in the Northwest. And I got a call in the studio during my show, and I picked it up and I said, you know, Northwest Public Radio, Robin Rylette, may I help you? Define classical music. No introduction or anything. And I was a little bit taken aback, and I said, excuse me, define classical music for me. And all of a sudden I thought, okay, I think I know where to go with this. And I said, classical music is technically that which was written between 1730 and 1820. This long pause. Well, I didn't think you knew the definition because you never play any of that music. So for that person, we had a discussion, and that person, clearly classical music was this specific period of music between 1730 and 1820, which is defined as classical, but that doesn't mean classical music anymore. Classical music is everything from, could we play this one clip, our first clip, John? And it's everything from this. He's bringing it up for us. So that's by Cristobal de Morales. That's an example of medieval music. And that was written in the medieval music period alone, Jennifer, goes from 500 AD to 1400 AD. You know, and then if you can play the second clip for me, this is, there you go. That's Renaissance music. So that's an example of Renaissance music from a very famous German Renaissance composer called Michael Pretorius. So here you've got music between 1400 and 1600. Are your eyes twirling yet?
I mean,
it just spans the centuries. And then you have, let's play the next one. You'll recognize this. Maine Public Television fans, you know that as the original theme to Masterpiece Theater. That's an example of Baroque music. So I'm going to stop there because now we've gone from 500 AD up to 1760.
And so Baroque, what you call Baroque, is what many people define as classical.
I believe it is. And I believe also what many people define as classical is the classical period of music. So that's where you have your Haydn, and that's where you have your Mozart. Are, I think, two of the big names there that many, many people recognize. And then you bring it all the way up to the 21st century, and you have something I played yesterday during our fall membership campaign, which is a concerto, which was you know, really made popular in Baroque and then redefined in the classical, strict classical period. But instead of having a violin or a piano or a flute or clarinet as the solo instrument, it has a Tennessee music box and a mountain dulcimer. So it's just completely taking that form of 300 or 400 years ago and bringing it into the 21st century.
Okay, my last question for you before I let you turn it around.
Okay.
Maybe. Is that, how do you choose? So given this, you know, centuries and centuries, and knowing that some of your audience wants something that's relaxing and peaceful, other members of your audience might like to be challenged and hear something they've never heard before. Knowing that you have to put on a show 5 days a week, how do you sort of select for each day?
Okay, so here's just true confession time you're talking about. Hearing
true confession on Maine
Calling. And Jennifer knows this because we work in the same space. There are days when I know she's heard me sit in there and I'm going, what am I going to play tomorrow? you know, as long as I've been doing this, there are days when trying to find that mix of all those parameters, I'm just sitting there and there's honestly this blank, but then it starts kicking in. So one of the things I'm looking for is trying to touch on some of those various musical periods. The other thing I'm looking for is a variety of the sound. So I don't want to just play an orchestra after an orchestra after an orchestra. So I try to mix up maybe an orchestra with a chamber piece, and then you might hear a piano and violin, and then you might hear a clarinet with an orchestra. So, and then you might hear a choral piece. So mixing up the variety. It's all about variety for me, because I think that's the hallmark of radio. If you just wanted to hear only Baroque music, that's what your CD player is for, right?
You know, and that's really the same for Main Calling. We're looking for a variety of topics. If you're a regular listener to Main Calling, you know that you really, the variety is very broad. It might be a show that has to do with something in the news one day, such as a political show, and something having to do with health the next day, or something having to do with education, something having to do with the natural world. And we're always looking at variety as well.
Well, that's one of my questions for you. First, I want to set the scene for our listeners, which is near the Main Calling headquarters, there is this enormous whiteboard.
And it's Main Calling headquarters, near our desks.
Near your desks, the official Main Calling headquarters. And they have this huge whiteboard, and they are on the whiteboard is the calendar for that month. And every day there's what is the topic? And then they have a smaller calendar. They're looking ahead 1 and 2 months.
Yes.
You're planning ahead that far. So how in the world do you decide what you're going to do month by month?
Well, you know, you've heard me say the names Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn on
yes,
the air
I have.
As the producers. The three of us sit right near each other, and we are having a perpetual conversation, Robin. We argue about show topic ideas. We talk about if we're going to do this topic, how will we do it differently than the time we did last time? Who would be the right voices if we're going to do a program on something? We want to have a variety of voices to do it. And we do. We physically step back from that whiteboard and we sort of think, well, boy, we've done a couple of shows on this in this area, but we haven't done one in this area in a while. You know, we haven't done a show where we're looking at an education issue a while. Maybe it's time to revisit something. And then there will be three or four ideas that are kind of in the ether that we've been talking about for a while. Well, which one is appropriate to do now? Often we'll plan programs around something happening. We know if there's, for example, going to be a big conference on something, or we know that something's planning to happen in the news, you know. We know maybe a court decision is going to come down or something like that. Sometimes we're planning it with the news cycle, but other times we're planning it to, time with the shrimping season, or, you know, we're always looking for the appropriate time for something. If it's a book, we want to have the author. We love it when we have the author, especially if it's a kind of big nonfiction book, the day that the book comes out, you know. And we're always, it's a little bit of a puzzle. It's actually a great big puzzle. But it is nice to have that whiteboard to be able to step back and have a broad look at what our topics are and think about them.
So here's a question for you, because I have heard from my office your discussions on this. And sometimes I actually, as you know, pop in and have a comment to make, or I just want to walk over there and hang out with you guys and listen to the lively discussion. But one of the things that I've wondered about is, have you ever had a show on that you weren't sure about? That you're thinking, okay, we want to do this topic, but do we really think this is going to work? And it just went gangbusters?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll give you this example, then we have to go to a break. And one of our examples, we did a program on elderberries, and our producer, Cindy Hahn, came up with the idea. And our other producer, Jonathan Smith, wasn't sure that we could have a conversation about elderberries for an hour. You know, that's always his, you know, it's okay if it's interesting, but for a whole hour. And it turned out to be a wonderful conversation, because it turns out elderberries, one, people in their families have a history. Maybe their grandparents made elderberry wine, or maybe they moved into an old house and there was an elderberry bush. It's also kind of trendy. It's kind of one of those new flavors that are coming on the culinary scene. For all these different reasons, it wasn't just about what is an elderberry and how do you grow it, but really about the cultural and historic and the resurgence of this. It turned out to be a terrific show, such a great show that we rebroadcast it once. So that's one example that pops into mind. We do have to take a break. This is Jennifer Rooks. We're speaking with Robin Rylett, who's music director here at Maine Public. It's a special program. We thought this was going to be right in the middle of our Grow Together membership drive, but we reached our goals early. That doesn't mean it's too late to show your support. You can still pledge at mainpublic.org. If you'd like to call in and ask a question of myself or Robin, maybe I'll rephrase it. If you'd like to call in and ask Robin a question, no, I'm kidding. 1-800-399-3566. You can email us talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. This is Maine Calling.
What can be said about the Beatles' 1968 release that came to be known as the White Album?
I thought it was the most amazing piece of music I had ever heard.
I thought it was just about the weirdest album I had ever heard.
Mother Superior jumped the gun.
Amazing melodies that just are impossible to forget.
Listen for the White Album Listening Party.
And you can listen for the White Album Listening Party Saturday evening from 8 to 11 here on Maine Public Radio. The Grow Together Fall Membership Drive was a great success, raising over $275,000 and welcoming in over 825 new members from across the state and beyond. Thank you for doing your part. Member support allows Maine Public Radio to inspire, educate, and inform you and your community. Support from the community enables Maine Public to grow and expand the programs and services that you value. We'll all grow together. Thank you again for your generous support.
Welcome back. This is a special Maine Calling airing on both our Maine Public News and classical channels. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, I have the pleasure of having Maine Public classical host Robin Rylett here with me. We are sharing some inside information about both Robin's morning classical show and about Maine Calling. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I think all these days of a pledge drive are doing in my voice, Robin. Oh, my goodness. I have some water here.
Well, let me pose you a question, Jennifer, while you are refreshing. One of the things I wonder about when I'm listening to the show is how much instinct play a role in what you're doing as a host? Because sometimes I'll listen and I'm listening to somebody who's on the phone or somebody who's in the studio with you, and I'm going, oh, how is Jennifer going to handle this? And so is it like an instinctual thing?
Well, I guess it has to be, because I'm not thinking. You know, I don't go in with a plan. You can't go in with a plan when you have live callers. So
you don't know what's
going to
happen.
It must be an instinctual thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that I think is plays much more of a role in, I think, in everything that's done in radio than we might imagine. You know, because sometimes I've picked out an entire show, and then something will happen in the day. I'll get some news in the day. Or the weather will suddenly shift. Something happens, and I will literally be scrambling, going, this isn't right. No, I'm going to change it. And I may change an entire hour of programming while I'm going along, because something in my instinct tells me this isn't working as well as I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will find things that I'm trying to think of an example, and my memory is failing me. But what happens is we'll plan a program months in advance or weeks in advance, and then that day or the day before, there will have been some breaking news that's related to our topic, and that kind of changes the conversation. Often it turns out really, really well, because we've already lined up people who are experts on whatever that is, whether it's a court decision or something that's come out in the automotive industry or something like that. But it does change the program that we had planned into something else. It's rarely ever a bad thing, though.
No, you can. Going with the flow has some major advantages, doesn't it?
That's right. It does.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Jennifer, is you started off in television. So when you made that transition from television to radio, what was that like for you? I mean, can you tell us what you thought some of the advantages that you maybe discovered when you transition to radio?
Yeah, sure. It's funny. I did work in television for a long, long time. 20-something, 25 years. But I started in radio on my college radio station.
That.
Yeah, we had in my college radio station. It was a rock and roll radio station. I was terrible back then, Robin. I love the idea of being a DJ. I love the idea of being on the radio, but I was actually a little terrified and didn't like the sound of my own voice. So I said the bare minimum. I'd play like four songs in a row. Come on, say the names of all four songs, the station ID, and play four more songs. But anyway, I think I love both radio and television. And what I love about television is, of course, visual storytelling. And I remember when I was doing a radio story here at Maine Public and doing a story about a juggling class. And there was this little kid juggling, and he had his little tongue sticking out and, you know, focusing on the little red rubber balls. And I thought, oh, this would be such a great shot on television, you know, and I was doing a radio piece. But I will say that usually what I love about radio is the intimacy of radio. You know, I'm talking to you and there's one person listening. There aren't thousands of people listening. There's one person. There's one person who's driving in his or her car, maybe in the shower, maybe making lunch. It's very personal and intimate. And I really like that. I like that we have an hour now. I spent years of doing 1.5 and 2 minute television pieces and trying to get a whole lot of information into a very short.
That's a huge difference.
And having an hour to really talk about a topic in depth, ask a follow-up question, and also allow the person on the other side of the table to explain where they're coming from. To, you know, if they start to say something, they realize they're not saying it quite how they want to finish it and clarify. I really do, honest to goodness, love both media. I have, obviously programs I like better than others. and I like public broadcasting immensely. You know, I love watching nature on PBS. I love watching the NewsHour on PBS stations. But I do love radio, and I love our coworkers. And you know what I love, Robin? I love not having to worry about what my hair looks like when I go on the air.
That is a true insider information for people in radio. We don't have to worry about that. You can have a bad day in radio. If you're looking to change professions, consider it.
I have an email from Maureen. Robin and Jennifer, I'm always so impressed with your time management. How do you avoid dead air?
Wow. I wish I could say I've avoided dead air my entire career, but there are those moments when things happen. So here's insider information. When you're sitting in this control room, you have three computer screens that you're looking at, and you have two different mice, and I've got a couple of CD players. And every once in a while, especially in the winter, you'll be in the middle of a sentence of something that you need to read off the computer, and some sort of static electricity will happen, and the screen goes blank. And sometimes I could just talk right on through that, and every once in a while, my mind goes blank along with a computer screen. So there's all sorts of funny things like that that happen. I don't know about you with Maine Calling, Jennifer.
I don't know. I think I'm just talkative. I'm not really quite sure what the secret is, but I know that, Robin, what you do scares me sometimes. There are times I've snuck into the studio to tell you something, and all of a sudden a piece sounds like it's ending. But it is an ending, because that's how classical music is. And I'll think, oh my gosh, I'm in here talking to Robin and her piece is over. And you just seem so relaxed, when it was really just a pause in the music.
That's the funny thing about classical music is, over the years, that there are times when I've played a new piece of music and I don't know when the pauses are between the different movements. And, you know, I've snuck out to get some water or something, and I come charging down the hall, and then I come in here and it's just the next movement. And sometimes it's with a familiar piece of music that I've known, but there's this weird sort of panic that sets in when you're a radio person, when you don't hear sound, even if it's legitimate. So
we'll go to Steve, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had a question for Robin. I really enjoy listening to the classical station, and I wonder if it'd be possible to show the information digitally as you're playing the pieces, the composer and the piece itself.
So is what you're asking about, like, when you're in your car radio and you see the name of the composer and the name of the piece?
No, I know that...
You see the music piece.
That's a really good question, Stephen. I know that that's... You know, Jennifer had asked me earlier, you know, how has your role changed? Well, part of our role as hosts is, especially music hosts, is now being able to let our listeners who are listening digitally or electronically have access to that, what we call metadata. And we are doing that more. Now, if you're streaming on our website or on our app, that information should be up there. I honestly don't know, Steve, about the connection between that and the car. But you know what? If you leave your name and number, I will talk to our digital team and get back to you on that.
Okay. Okay, we're getting the number. Thank you, Steve, for your call. We're going to go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. To Ms. Rooks, Susan Sandberg had a great answer. The pictures are better on the radio. And to Ms. Rylette, I'm wondering, are you playing... We don't hear a lot of Stabat Maters and some of the heavier pieces. Are you trying to make the program more popular classical music, or you just don't have the time for some of the heavy stuff?
You know, that's a question that all classical music hosts get at some point or another. And so I want to take this answer seriously, Larry, in that I understand your desire for that kind of repertoire. For me, part of what motivates me is that I personally have 3 hours, and it's in the morning. So I tend to not play really longer pieces. That's part of it. And there are some Stabat Maters that are not as long. But I think also I'm trying to pick music that I think might work for what I think people are doing at that time of the day. And I know some people might just have the time to sit and listen to a piece, but a lot of people are, we have kind of busy lives, and a lot of people are going in and out. They may be going in and out doing errands all day. They may be able to tune in for 5 minutes here and 10 minutes here. So that's part of that too. Having to try to find pieces that can connect with people, but maybe don't take up, you know, such a long period of time, at least during the day. You'll often hear longer pieces in the evening, and I think there's a reason for that.
Larry, thanks so much for your question. Hannah's got a couple emails, so we're going to start with some questions for Robin. She asks, you talked about what has changed technically. What, if anything, has changed in the way you host in terms of tone, curation, purpose, etc.?
I honestly think that has remained fairly consistent in my career because my goals are consistent, and that is I want to provide a variety of music that you or anyone else that's listening can connect to and relate to. I want to play music that is familiar and beloved. I want to introduce you to some things that you may not have heard before. And I think one of the things that is different in a way as a host is how much social media are you going to be involved in? Because some hosts, they're on Facebook, they Snapchat, they Instagram, it's all over the place. And we're still here at Maine Public Classical working on that puzzle piece for us. So I know that's a little bit divergent from what you asked, but that is something that I do think about a lot.
All right. And she wants to know, did you ever have an experience like the Elderberry Show story? So really, she's turning around your question to me onto you.
Yes. So years ago, I was in the folk section of the library at my former station, and I saw this thing called the Relief of Derry Symphony. And I thought, what is this? And I pulled it out. It was by an Irish composer, Sean Davy. And I took it into my office and listened to it, and I thought, what was this doing in the folk session? It's a full-on symphony with 4 or 5 pipe bands, and it tells the story of the siege of Derry. And I thought, okay, this is a long work. It's like 58 minutes. And as I just said, you know, generally between 9 and noon, don't play those long pieces. I just took a chance doing it, and the phones exploded. I mean, people were going, what is this? We've never heard this before. Everyone loved it, and it was just one of those pieces that became a staple at my old station, and in fact, it made it into the top, it was number 10 on the list of favorites of our listeners at the time, And to the point where a woman at the Londonderry County Derry newspaper in Ireland saw this online and did a feature article about it. It was amazing. It was just completely unexpected.
That's a great story. We do have to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Also, want to tell you about tomorrow. It is time for our much-anticipated Maine Calling Made in Maine gift guide. It's our seventh year of doing this popular show. So if you have gift ideas, send us an email or post on our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
As I've always said, there is so much great music, and up to now, there really hasn't been enough time to share it all. Hi, Sarah Willis here. Well, guess what? We now have all the time we can use to bring you hours and hours of great music, and whenever you want. The new Intune online stream is up now and running 24/7. So you don't have to wait till noon or 10 or whenever. It's right now and whenever. To listen, visit mainpublic.org and click on Listen Now. It's one of the choices. Thanks for checking it out.
And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Acclaimed Globe and Mail journalist Doug Saunders argues in his book, Maximum Canada, why 35 million Canadians are not enough, that Canada has had trouble keeping the immigrants it does attract. This minimizing impulse, as he terms it, has to be jettisoned if Canada is to take its rightful place on the world stage. That's Ideas from the CBC coming up at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling, here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to a special Maine Calling on both our news and classical stations. Today on the program, I am joined by friend and classical music host and music director Robin Rylette. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Well, look who's calling. Sarah Willis. Hi.
Hello, ladies. It's so fun to hear you guys talking about radio. And I just wanted to know if you, too, have a recurring dream about dead air where you're – I do this all
– Yes.
It's a recurring dream where I'm out in a field and I realize the song is over. I can't find a microphone. I'm locked out of the studio. Do you have those, too?
Pretty much the same one, although one time I was in a cave. But it's pretty much the same one, Sarah. That's brilliant.
Oh, my gosh, Sarah. I don't have dead air. I have the guests who don't show up for the program.
It's your equivalent of the dead air dream. That is so funny, Sarah. It was so exciting to hear you talking, too, about your stream. People are so jazzed about your stream.
Yeah, I'm going to be joining you in the world of kind of other areas. It'll be really fun, and you know, for those moments when people don't feel like having some news, there's other choices now.
There are other choices. Great.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing you guys talking about radio. It's really fun.
Well, so Sarah, I'm so glad you called in, and we didn't even plan it, but we're thrilled for your new stream.
No.
Congratulations.
Yep. And thanks, and congratulations too on the great fun drive.
Thank you.
You know, Sarah,
yay.
I'm going to have one of those dreams tonight. You know that, no?
Me too, probably.
That was Sarah Willis, host of In Tune on Maine Public. We're going to go to Ingrid calling from Waterville. Hi, Ingrid. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I really love Robin Rylette's classical music, you know, program. I started listening to it when Robert Lertzimer was still on, it's a long time ago, and I've been listening to the program ever since. And what I like about Robin and the other hosts, it's what Robert Lertzimer did. He would explain the history of the music piece. And I just love that because, you know, you get to know, you know, where it came from and who did it. And so anyway, that's what I wanted to tell you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid. Ingrid, you know, I don't know if you've heard this segment that we run on Fridays on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. It's called Poems from Here with Stuart Kestenbaum, Maine's Poet Laureate. But the theme music for that was written by a Mainer, Chris Moore. And at the very end of that theme music, you hear bird songs. those are the very bird songs that Robert J. Lertzma would open his show with on Morning Pro Musica. Isn't that a great tie-in?
That is a great inside, a little inside
little
baseball
inside,
there.
Yeah, inside baseball. Inside baseball.
Ingrid, thanks so much for your call. And I agree with you. Robin is terrific. We're going to go to, this is another email from Hannah. I'd also love to hear from Miss Jennifer Rooks on the first question about what has changed in how you host. And, you know, Hannah, I don't really know. I think it's probably easier for someone on the outside to judge how it's changed. I think I'm probably a little more relaxed, a little more casual. Early in my career, I think, and early in my hosting of Main Calling, afraid of making a mistake, and now a little more free. What about you, Robin? Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do think that's true. But I was really fortunate that one of my mentors, when I first started hosting classical music, I played for the first time. I'd never heard it before because I hadn't seen Platoon. Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, and it has this big crescendo, and then there's like 3 or 4 seconds of silence, and it picks up again. I didn't know that because I just started hosting classical music. So I cut the music off, and I started talking, and then Bill came down the hall, and he goes, by the way, Robin, you know, there's a false ending to that. There's another 2 or 3 minutes. And I was mortified. I mean, I thought, I'm going to get fired. This is horrible. And he looked at me, and he said, nobody died, Robin. It's not brain surgery. Just wanted you to know. And it was such a wonderful thing to say because nobody's perfect, right? You do the best you can, and that's what you're here for, to do the best you can every day to make your lives more enjoyable through music and more interesting through what you learn on Main Calling. But, you know, sometimes you just take yourself so seriously. And I don't think I do as much as I've gotten older.
Sure. Agreed.
Yeah.
We'll go to Dirk in Belfast. Hi, Dirk. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Great show. I want to pass along a tip that I learned from listening to WFMT in Chicago, the old standby in the old days back in the 60s and 70s. They were quite wise to leaving dead air between songs or music. And I don't know how they came up with the appropriate amount. If you listen to AM radio, sometimes they overlap the songs, and I just find it absolutely atrocious. But there needs time for the brain to finish with the last piece and settle, if you get my drift.
Yes, I do get your drift. So I'm going to give you again a little bit of that inside information because I completely understand what you're saying. I mean, sometimes, like, for instance, if I would play Clair de Lune, it just puts you in such a crazy good place, right? It's just so gorgeous and you're just transported that it's really hard for me to come back on. Sometimes it's hard for me to come back on the air because I'm actually crying when I'm listening to a piece of music. So I'm going to tell you why, Derek, radio stations tend to be so careful about dead air. It's that idea that so many people are tuning in and out and in and out, and that people are in their radios passing through. Oh, Dirk. I'm sorry, Dirk. Passing over and checking out what's on all these different stations. And if they don't hear anything for 2 or 3 seconds, they're gone. Mm. I know that sounds strange, but that really is inside information. Why so many stations want you to have those very tight breaks. They don't want there to be dead air. They don't want to give anyone a chance to tune away. So that's just the behind the scenes information, Dirk. But I do appreciate what you're saying. And I think we do try to let it breathe just a little bit.
Thanks, Dirk, for your call. Yeah, go ahead.
My counter to that is that Robert J. carried it to a Robert J. Lertzma used to carry it to an extreme. He would sometimes have dead air for 10 or 15 seconds. You wonder if he died. But it worked. I mean, he didn't lose listenership, nor did WFMT. They didn't carry it to the extent of Robert J., but they did leave some pretty lengthy pieces in there. So I would counter with that and say, you know, you're in charge. Do as you think is appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dirk, for your call. A tweet from Michael. I'm curious what music Ms. Rylette listens to in her off hours.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if I had to choose one word to describe myself, my personality, it would be eclectic. So it's everything. You know, it depends on the mood I'm in. It might be Chris Isaak's Baha Sessions. It might be a Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto. It might be this crazy song that's running around the office here with whistling and clapping. I'm completely obsessed with this song, and I have it on my radio. I mean, I play it on my computer all the time. It might be Van Morrison. You know, I really like In Tune by Ten with, or In Tune with Sarah Willis, and I like that kind of music. So it's honestly a little bit of everything you could possibly imagine.
If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking with Robin Rylett, classical music host, music director here at Maine Public. We're talking about the program she produces. We're talking about Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Robin's waving at me.
Well, I have another question for you, Jennifer, if I may.
Sure.
So I would love to know what, if you had to choose a favorite aspect of your job, what would it be?
Oh, it's easy. Just the people I get to meet every day. You know, I mean, I get to meet some of the most interesting people. I get to learn from experts all the time. And I have used so much of the information I have learned in the program in my own life. And whether it's maybe how to talk to my kids about something, maybe a health-related tip, constantly. And I get to ask these questions of so many. I mean, you know, you host a show like Maine Calling day in and day out, and it helps you be a little more optimistic about the world because you realize how many fine people are out there, how many really interesting, really smart, really people are very dedicated to whatever it is that they are doing, whether it's their profession or their avocation or, you know, what they're involved in on a volunteer basis. And so, you know, there's, and we have an embarrassment of riches here in Maine. The kind of people that, you know, obviously we know the kinds of people who write, you know, what kind of writers we have here in Maine, what kind of academics we have at the fine academic institutions. It's really.
But, you know, I'm thinking back to a show that you had when you had a game warden on.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, this is somebody that most of us, we don't know what they do for a living, but I was so impressed by what this man did for a living and how he had served the state of Maine for so many years. So I totally understand what you're saying, Jennifer. That's fantastic.
An email from Steve. Listening to Robin articulate the selections that comprise the length and breadth of her morning classical program and being an avid listener, I was struck by the realization we don't hear a lot of choral music on the show. I realize that the evening is a time more conducive to offering the heavier choral works, but how about some of the lighter, shorter pieces out there, like the music of William Billings and his ilk? They'd be very much appreciated. Many thanks for the great work you do each day.
Oh, you're welcome, and thanks for the suggestion. I actually had a choral director that we're going to hear from tomorrow on the show about a concert that's coming up. He did a little cultural conversation with me, and he said, you know, the word in my area of the choral conducting is that Robin Rylett plays choral music on the air. So I do play choral music on the air. I know whatever we love, I think we never hear enough of it, frankly. So if you are a particular fan of choral music, probably you're not going to hear enough of it on my show. But I will. How about this? I'll think about it more. And I haven't played William Billings in a long time, so look forward to that and maybe next week sometime.
And you probably like suggestions.
Yeah, I do. I do. I can't always do all of them because some of them just really don't fit into the format, but William Billings certainly does.
Great. Thanks, Robin. And we'll go to John calling. John, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from my car. I have hands-free, though, I want you to know.
Oh, that's good. Well, where is your car right now? Are you in Maine?
I'm between Waterville and Augusta.
Okay.
I'm on my way to Portland to play a concert with the Portland Jazz Orchestra, but that's another whole topic. I wanted to ask Robin if she has, in the recent times, played any of the classical pieces that Frank Zappa has written.
Wow, no. That's the honest answer. I don't even know if we have any in this library. I think the last time I played something, it was the Dog Breath Variations. But that's been a while ago. I'll check that out and see if we have something.
John, thanks for the suggestion. And we'll move on to Alan, who's calling from Portland. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi there. I was wondering if we could persuade Robin to identify pieces with the Kirschel numbers or the Opus numbers for Mozart or Haydn or people like that.
Maybe. I do it a little bit. I don't do it consistently. Those are posted on the website and on our playlist on the website, and they also pop up on our stream if you're listening. So we do provide that information, but in general, I don't do that.
I mean, when we're listening to like a Haydn Synchrotet and you simply say it's a Haydn Synchrotet in D major, he wrote like two dozen of them. So it would just help me enjoy it more so that I knew, you know, which period of his work it came from.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. It's kind of something that's has really fallen out of use for a lot of classical music hosts for a lot of reasons. But yeah, I do it sometimes. I just don't do it consistently. You're right.
Alan, thanks for the question. We just have a couple minutes left. And Robin, I want to talk about something that I've learned since coming to Maine Public Radio, and that is that classical music hosts at NPR stations around the country, they talk to one another, and there are standards that you all have, and those standards evolve. Can you tell me, like, about what those if you go to a conference, what those conversations are like, how you're trying to improve and change what all of you do?
Yeah, well, you know, I went to a content conference in August in Austin, and we did have a lot of conversations about, I think, how to continue to make this music relevant in an era where everyone is on social media. I think that was a big one. How can we provide different kinds of content? How can we make this classical music, this incredible body of music, even more relatable to people and draw more people to this? That is huge. So a lot of stations who have large staffs in their music department are starting initiatives to work with children and children's programming. So that continues to be something that we're all interested in. And we talked about it during our fall membership drive. You know, we're here, Maine Public Classical, for the present, but we want to be here for the future, too. So that's one big thing.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today,
fun,
Robin.
Jennifer.
It was really fun. We're going to have you back. I'm going to pin you down as soon as you leave the studio. That's Robin Rylett, Maine Public's musical director and host of Morning Classical Music. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as all sorts of links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for our 7th annual Made in Maine gift guide. And don't forget, even though we have wrapped up the on-air pledge drive, you can still show your support for programs like this one at mainepublic.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.